Here we go. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Man, there are so many compelling storylines with the Mavs right now. The future of this roster and Kyrie Irving and the coach and the new arena and all that. And we have a special guest joining us to talk about those topics. Of course, the NBA Finals underway tonight. The draft at the end of the month. Tim Cato, national writer for All City, joining us now here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Doing fantastic. How are you, fellas?
Doing wonderful. Pumped for this finals that might be the most compelling matchup we've had in a long time. But I want to know from you, how much of a shot do you think the Knicks have here?
I think they absolutely have a shot. You know, I honestly kind of view this as a toss-up series. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be tight. You know, Wimby is the best player in the league, and that is such an enormous, massive advantage. But, you know, New York is one of those teams that can play lineups that actually pull them out of the paint. You know, they could play legitimate five out. You know, that's something that stands out. And also just the groove they're in, the way that they, you know, have been playing up to this point, and the rest advantage, you know, I think all of that works in their favor. You know, I think San Antonio probably has shown they're the slightly better, more talented team, which is a crazy thing to say about a team that young. But I don't know who's going to win. I probably would lean predicting Spurs, but I really think either team, both teams have legitimate chances.
NBA report today from Jake Fisher, quote, "I don't necessarily believe that Kyrie Irving will be on the Mavericks roster on opening night." Have things progressed over the last couple of weeks in your mind that maybe Kyrie won't be a Mav to start the season?
It would surprise me mildly, but Jake is someone to trust, someone to listen to. Good friend of mine. I've actually headed up to New York for unrelated reasons tomorrow. Should hopefully see him out there. I would be disappointed if we don't get to see Cooper Flagg and Kyrie play with each other as teammates. You know, I think everybody here would be. You know, but the timeline is different. You know, his timeline and, you know, the Mavericks timeline and Cooper Flagg's timeline, you know, are not fully aligned. And if Kyrie is seeking, you know, a reset, you know, I think it's fully and 100%, you know, Dallas's responsibility to approach that honestly. And so, you know, I think we're still getting info and data points for what exactly Masai sees this team's future being, you know, what type of timeline he thinks they're on, whether it's, you know, another year or two to kind of build and, you know, not be a tanking team. They don't have picks for that, but, you know, just be a team that understands that, you know, they aren't trying to, you know, go contend next season. You know, that is a scenario where it would make sense that Kyrie Irving goes and plays for another team. And, you know, we understand the value and respect and the interest he has around the league from, you know, multiple teams that would be interested and, you know, offering Dallas something for Kyrie Irving that they would really have to consider.
But this would be Kyrie wanting out, not the Mavs preferring to build, go on without him?
I think that's a really good question. I don't have a great answer for that at the moment. It is curious. That it's something I should send a few texts about and, you know, see if I can't get back to you guys with a better answer. But that's been my understanding. But again, Masai is just so new to this role. And in what he's saying about, you know, his stance and what the team is doing going forward, that it's just not entirely clear to me yet.
Do you think the Kyrie Luka relationship was so good that, like, teaming back up with LeBron in LA would be of interest? Is there any path to getting a deal done with the Lakers?
I think every NBA star is interested in playing in LA. You know, I don't think that is you know, I think absolutely, you know, that's on the table, you know, or at least I guess I should say it the other way. I think that the LeBron relationship with Kyrie is strong enough that you have to note that, you know, it's certainly something that if there's mutual interest and there's mutual ability between these two sides that, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. But, you know, I think there's a lot of teams in the league that would be interested in Kyrie Irving if he is available this summer.
Tim, just talking to folks around the league, you think we're getting a clearer picture of how the first nine picks are going to go in this draft, or teams still kind of all over the place when it comes to kind of getting this draft order down?
Yeah, I mean, the toughest thing with the draft is when you know there's going to be a trade-in. You know, it's just, what is that trade going to be? Who is it going to be? How is that going to affect things? You know, I think we're all fairly confident that Oklahoma City is a team that's probably, you know, they're going to do something with their picks, and it's not going to be draft, you know, players with all of them. You know, they seem like the obvious candidate to bundle them and move up. Even that in some ways, you know, we're kind of looking at, you know, Mara, the center that, you know, as somebody they would move up and go get. You know, I do agree that it does feel like there's starting to be a consensus of how this is going to go. I think that's often how it goes, but, you know, there's always chances for surprises.
Tim Cato with us here in the G-Bag Nation. What's going on with the head coaching search? I mean, we got the Sweeney news to Orlando. That was a bit of a gut punch for the Mavs. Gotten any closer to making that decision?
You know, this is the pressing question. My understanding of how Masai operates is that, you know, this is not going to linger for, you know, an eternity. This is something that is important to, you know, get settled and get checked off. And again, you look at the teams that have open head coaching positions, and, you know, none of them have Cooper Flagg. That is a very, very appealing situation. Working for Masai is an appealing situation. I think Dallas is pretty much going to have its choice of the market. You know, which may indicate that Sweeney just wasn't really on their radar. If we're being totally honest, that was sort of my impression, you know, in the past couple weeks. So yeah, I think it's coming. I don't know if we have an indication of exactly when or exactly, you know, if there's any leading favorites or candidates, but, you know, under Masai, I mean, even the Masai announcement was kind of out of nowhere. You know, there was not a, you know, days leading up to this decision. You know, this is likely to happen. It was just instant, out of nowhere. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the head coaching hire ends up looking and feeling the same way.
So you've been, I mean, when you've been on with us, you've talked about, like, this is Masai's team. He is making the decisions, and that seems to be even more clear now as we get closer to the draft. You still don't have a coach that has been hired. Like, they don't seem to really care about necessarily input there. So is this a position where if you're getting hired as the head coach in Dallas, you're the coach of the team? You're not really going to have say in how your roster is constructed whatsoever?
I think it's more that Masai is going to hire someone who is, you know, ideologically aligned with him in his decisions. You know, I'm sure that any coach, you know, in a healthy front office is going to be in the room and be willing, able to give input. But to your point, yes, I do think this is the Masai, you know, organization. I do think this is led by Masai, that, you know, he is the most influential person in the room. And, you know, that's going to be the case. You know, that's what you sign up for when you go hire someone like Masai.
It's Tim Cato, All City, with you here on The Fan. What's so wrong with the AAC, man? I love my old buildings where championships have been celebrated.
I don't know, man. I gotta drive up to the Galleria here in a minute, and I'm dreading that, you know. And I understand all the reasons. I understand that Dallas and its wealth is, you know, has gravitated north over the past couple decades. But I agree. You know, this is the Dallas is bucking a trend that exists throughout the NBA, where teams are not moving away from downtowns. If anything, they're moving closer to it. San Antonio is one of two franchises that doesn't have an arena downtown, but their new one is going to be downtown. They're moving closer to that, you know, here in a few years. And, you know, the other team is Philly, which kind of has a sports complex with, mm-hmm. you know, all three of their arenas, but that's still very close to downtown. It's about 5 minutes. Every other arena in the entire NBA, give or take a Clippers, if you want to, you know, say that, you know, there's a million downtowns in LA. You know, all these teams operate centrally, and they operate, you know, within the, you know, within the core of the city. And it's a bummer to me that isn't happening. I understand that, you know, it was not, you know, there's complications to it. Of course, they would, you know, the Mavericks would point at this and that and, you know, say, this is why we made this decision. This is why it makes sense. It still bums me out, man. You know, I just, I've always felt that arena should be downtown. And, you know, certainly I think arenas should be accessible by public transportation. And I'm pessimistic that's going to get done, you know, that we're actually going to have a robust, you know, public transportation line that kind of connects this new location.
Hey, Tim, I could walk to the arena from my house, so I'll rent you a room for a couple grand a month.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, if you want to, man, just park over at my place and you can walk right to the arena. I'm that close about this. But when something goes in...
I'll send you to the Galleria, you know? Why don't you run that errand for me after the show?
Absolutely. No, I literally grew up in that area, and I live within walking distance of the new what's going to be the new arena. So, yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be a problem. But I was going to ask you, though, when they do make a decision like this, was this just something that was always going to happen? Was it always going to be this, or did it just, was there just so many bad feelings with what's going on in downtown Dallas that they didn't want to do this?
Yeah, my sense is that they were open to multiple options. This location and this conclusion, I think, was always likeliest, but I never got the sense that the conversations about City Hall and, you know, putting the arena in proper downtown were, you know, just like running out of ground ball or just for PR. I think it was an option. I think it was something that they like legitimately considered. The problem is just that it was the more complicated option, which is why this, this location is the one that they ended up choosing.
Tim Cato with us, eighth year in a row, no repeat champion in the NBA, and now the Thunder have some important roster decisions and luxury tax threshold decisions to make. How good are the Thunder going to be next year?
It's going to be awesome. I mean, they had the best record in the league, and they were, you know, they took San Antonio to seven games despite missing, you know, their second best player and then their, you know, replacement for their second best player. Everybody, you know, dragged Chet, and after that game seven, he deserved it. But Chet was never going to be, you know, his role on the team wasn't, well, you're the third option, but you bump up to second if second out. Like, he isn't capable of that. They had a player, AJ Mitchell, you know, who was designated as their, you know, fill in second option shot creator. And yeah, he missed most of the series. And so, you know, I think everything in Oklahoma City would be totally fine if they just ran it back. You know, there are going to be some tweaks around the edges. They have young players coming in, and they're going to almost certainly jettison some veterans, some that are in the rotation, like Lou Dort, I think is probably pretty likely. A lot of speculation about him. You know, some other guys who are a little bit further down the bench. You know, like there are absolutely moves that they got to make and will make, but I still see them as, you know, one of the league's best, let's say, three teams, you know, since there's two still alive and, you know, two in the finals and, you know, they were the last one to lose. So I think if you're going into next season thinking you're a top three team in the NBA, I'm not looking at my roster and thinking, okay, gotta do wholesale changes. I think they're still going to be great.
Jalen Brunson's had quite the playoff run, and as you reflect back on your time covering him in Dallas, I mean, what surprised you about his evolution as he's now leading a team to the NBA Finals?
Just that it happened. I mean, this is not what I this is not what I expected from the Jalen Brunson, you know, that we saw for a few years in Dallas. Even as I was a huge believer, and you know, we saw him, you know, his ascension, his, you know, game one against Utah, we saw all this stuff and still I never would have predicted this type of scoring rise from him. What a fun player, you know, like just the epitome of, you know, he gets the most out of what he is physically capable of. You know, love that guy.
Thanks for the updates, Tim. Enjoy these finals, and we'll probably circle back around, maybe catch up with you before the draft.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
There he goes. Tim Cato, All-City National writer here with you on 105 Through the Fan. Yeah, head coach hire, draft, Kyrie rumors. We're going to have to deal with that. Man, that would be tough. But, hey, if he wants to move on, then I would get it. I would understand. But, man, I think there's enough quality here on the wings and with the bigs and with Cooper Flagg. I'd be excited. But, shoot, like teaming back up with LeBron and Luka, maybe backing up Luka, maybe playing the 30 games Luka's going to be hurt with the Lakers and trying to go for a championship is more attractive to him right now. He certainly wanted to go there. Remember last time he was a free agent, he was chilling in L.A. at their games courtside. We got a football fix coming up, Chief, where yeah, Woolchuck, where are you taking it? I'll get this right.
That's 3 days in a row, I think. We're on a heater.
The Football Power Index, and Micah gives his side on what went down with Jerry. That's next in the Nation.
Welcome back, Nation. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. And here's Woolchuck with your football fix. I almost did it again. I almost threw to you, Chief. I swear. Here's Woolchuck.
I caught that thing and then fumbled it. And the defense would have returned it for a touchdown.
Picking it up. Let's get our fix right after this.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir.
Wrong side.
Left side.
Wrong side.
Left side.
I use these for acid indigestion.
So what are we going to use these for?
Intimidation.
You know I got to get my fix, man.
Interesting wrinkle, courtesy of Mary Kay Cabot in the Myles Garrett trade. The 2029 third-round pick the Browns receive from the Rams in this trade would become a first-round pick if the Rams traded Myles Garrett to any other team within the division, so the Steelers, Ravens, or Cincinnati Bengals, which is fascinating. Why? Well, just so happens that the All-In Rams can legally offer this trade in 2028 if Stafford retires once his extension ends. They could trade Ty Simpson, their 2028 first, their 2029 first, and their 2030 first to
the Cincinnati Bengals
to get one Joe Burrow. And Cincy would also save $32.5 million against the cap if Burrow asks out in 2028, courtesy of Evan Sidry. And that is interesting because that seems like just the thing the Rams would do.
Yeah, but I don't know. Well, maybe. I'm trying to think, like, if you're Cincinnati and you want Ty Simpson, do you want Myles Garrett? I don't know, but I get why the Browns would do this. Like,
yeah, just in
take
case.
That totally off
just
the table.
Just in case.
We're not going to see this guy twice a year at some point in the next few years.
Yeah, let's just remove it. Mary Kay Cabot also saying the Eagles never made a play for Myles Garrett, and there's zero chance they would have wanted Jalen Carter in return, sources tell Cleveland.com. So they definitely wanted Jared Verse, and that was kind of the only player that they would even consider in return for Myles Garrett. There's also Ian Rappaport, who's just putting the poo-poo kibosh on Josh Sweat. He said this has gained some steam on social media, so just to provide some clarity, Josh Sweat is not being traded, not to the Packers or not to anyone. Carry on. I respect you, Ian, but gosh, I just feel like there was too much smoke there for it to not be something. Something. But as long as he doesn't end up in Filthy, I'm okay with it. And then you had an arrest warrant issued for Brandon Ayuk on a misdemeanor charge related to speeding, which we discussed earlier.
Imagine that. He was blown by the stadium, right?
Yep. He took a video of it and posted it himself. So he tattled on himself. And if you're Brandon Ayuk, like, is this dude's career kind of done? He hasn't played football in a year. He's got injuries. He's really only had one good year anyway. He doesn't want to be in San Francisco. Like, if people are holding George Pickens' antics in Pittsburgh against him or being late to meetings, like, why the hell would you want anything to do with Brandon Ayuk?
You're desperate right now. You're desperately needing a wide receiver, and you think change of scenery is an option. But I almost got to put a PI on it because it doesn't add up. It seems like something has happened in Ayuk's life.
Yes,
where he's punting on tens of millions of dollars. And I'm just confused by it right now.
It's so weird.
I'm open-minded only because I think if we could get to the bottom of whatever's bothering him, maybe he can get his career back online.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Washington's the one team that I think of because he's got a relationship with Jaden Daniels and they need a wide receiver. But otherwise, like, I'd want nothing to do with Brandon Ayuk at this point in his career.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm good here. I'll try somebody else. Let's go to Micah Parsons.
By the way, that's an epidemic out here. Posting your crime.
Oh, really?
Your crime on the internet.
You got to show other people you did something crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's
the,
like the look
the
at
the feds got the internet too.
Yeah. It's, yeah. That's how they do most of their investigation these days.
You're making it too easy. Stop. Let's go to Micah Parsons, who is on with Jay Moore. Now, Micah also said today, if you missed it, that they've got a 9-month recovery rule. If there's more complications than just the ACL, he's got also had a meniscus cleanup. So he's not going to be back before the week five would be the earliest that he would be able to play. Most likely, just knowing the schedule, guys, he'll make his debut week six against the Cowboys. But here was Micah with Jay Moore opening up for the first time that I've heard publicly about his sit down with Jerry Jones.
When you're negotiating with Jerry, are you meeting with him in his office, having like Whataburger? Like, how is that going?
Me and Jerry would talk before. Like, we went to games together, like, he would treat me just like
one of his favorite players.
Yeah, for real. We talked about anything. I go into his office and he tells me that I'm the future of his team. And
kiss of death right there.
I'm like, cool. This is where I want to be. He goes, but you need to do a team-friendly deal. And I was just like, I do want to be the highest paid. Like, I don't care about how much. Like, I want to be the highest paid player at my position. I have to do it for not just me, but the rest of the league, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got guys like Hutchinson coming after Will Anderson. That could completely throw off the whole market. You got to think about guys that's after you and the future of the league when you're doing these negotiations. And he was like, okay. But, you know, at the end of the conversation, I said, you got to talk to my agent. Like, David has to clear this thing. Like, they sent a contract to David. They was like, I wouldn't take this deal. So I wouldn't take the deal.
What was the deal?
Like a 5-year, 200.
What was it you didn't like about it?
The structure wasn't good. Like the guarantees, the days, it has a lot to do with, is it fully guaranteed or is that injury guaranteed? What day does your money become guaranteed? People was like, yeah, Jerry offered you to be the highest paid player. You're greedy. But I was like, at the same time, he also said, F me with the structure to deal. I want the power. I want to control you. And if you notice, majority of his deals that he's done with players, he has full control and leverage.
Well, thoughts on Micah?
The old FU contract.
I can't really think of a lot of those contracts that he's done.
Well, he just told you that he negotiated the deal because they sent it to his agent.
Yeah.
That's what I just learned right there, that Mike and Jerry had a deal. Or they had worked through the framework of a deal. And to the point where the contract was actually put together and given to David Mulligan, and he said, I wouldn't sign this deal. So all that Jerry thinking that he didn't have a deal, to me, this seems like if you're Jerry Jones, why would you put together the deal and then have somebody else look at it? You put together the deal thinking that you've got the deal done. So right there, I think that Jerry and Micah had a deal, and that's, I think, what made Jerry so mad.
Yeah, and right, and the numbers he gave was pretty much what Jerry told us, too.
So Jerry, I mean, Micah had the deal in hand, and then he handed it to David Mulligan to look at, and that's where I think everything got crossed.
Yeah, I think when players do deals early, they are giving up something for the security. And I think Jerry has been good at getting those deals done early on the team's favor, right?
Sure.
But it's proven out with Zeke and with Dak that if you are willing to wait and bet on yourself and wait till the end, they'll do some of the most player-friendly deals possible. So I think I don't want to totally shoot down what Micah is saying right there, because we have seen some very team-friendly deals. Osa was very Cowboys-friendly.
Sure.
What was that, a $5 million discount?
Yeah.
Tyler Smith, Tyron Smith. There's been some big ones. I wouldn't say, Tyron though, it Smith. Feels like most of the deals are going in the Cowboys' favor.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I thought it was just interesting, Micah's side on that. Now,
what do you think about him saying that they're negotiating these deals, thinking about guys in the future?
I like that.
That's actually,
I wish they would do that when the CBA comes around.
That's a good point. No, that's a good point.
Well, yeah. But the problem with that, it usually ends up being like the players that aren't the higher paid are like, I can't sit out a year, guys. I've got to get a paycheck here.
Yeah.
So that's where you have the player association folding, because it's like the, you know, players 30 through 53 on any given roster, maybe even 20 through 53 that aren't your highest paid players. Like, I can't afford to legitimately threaten to sit out a season if we don't get a deal done. And that's where it's tough.
Yeah,
they got to get a pool or something together,
yeah,
brother.
Yeah.
You're making $60 million.
You got to hold strong.
Yeah, just hold out for a while. It'll pay off in the end.
You're right.
The minimum salary just hasn't gone up. I've been covering the Cowboys for the Fan for 16 years, and the league minimum has been around $800,000. You know, they don't get that CBA done where the minimum salary is growing with the salary cap or in accordance with what the top players. So it's a haves and haves not situation, sure, more than it's ever been.
They're fighting.
And this has been developing since the 90s. Sorry, Brian.
No, I was interrupting you. They're fighting for less practice is what they're fighting for.
Yeah.
That's what they're fighting for. They're not fighting to be paid better. They're fighting for less practice and less meeting time and all that. You know, this is, I think, I'm going to go back to, if I could, with Micah and what he said today. I think that Micah was telling everybody that he didn't think that he and Jerry were negotiating.
He clearly said negotiated.
That's what I'm saying. He was adamant about that. Like, I didn't think that Jerry and I were negotiating.
Yeah.
Obviously, you were.
Yeah.
You know,
to some level, they were. The number, the amount of money that was going to be on there.
$40 million a year would put him as the
five
highest.
For 200, send it to my agent.
Yeah, that puts him as the highest paid edge, right?
Right.
Am I right about that?
If like the send it to my agent is a big thing here.
Yeah. Which there, I don't another, know is actually another, true.
If that's true, it's like there's another pair of eyes that need to look at this. Otherwise, why don't you draw it up and I sign it right now?
Well, that's
there's clearly another step that needs to be had before this becomes an agreement.
Well,
here.
Jerry came to him saying that, hey, I need a team-friendly deal. And Micah then replied, I need to be paid the highest at my position. I don't care the amount. I just need to be paid the highest, which Jerry actually did.
Mm-hmm.
So Micah then, you know, Micah got.
So you think Micah relinquished all other parts of the contract just by you giving me the amount of money
exactly
that we agreed on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jerry did make him the highest paid at his position, which is exactly what Micah wanted. But the structure of it, sure, I could see an agent having a problem with that.
Right.
But Jerry did in fact make him the highest paid player at that position.
Yeah, I think George Pickens is doing the right thing. I think CeeDee and Dak both talked about how you don't want to go in there and talk with Jerry. You know, there's pitfalls and there's things you don't understand because you, as a player 4 years in the league, you don't know of all the different clauses and conditional factors that Jerry's writing in there. And in his 40 years of experience, he knows he's screwing you over. And you're just like, well, cool, I'm the highest paid. And then you hand it to your agent. And he's like, no, we can't do this. So I think any agent that has a player on the Cowboys now is going to remind him of this story and say you just don't want to do it.
No, it's not gonna end well.
And don't talk to that guy.
I think Mike is trying to save a little bit of face with the send it to my agent thing.
That's why I just believe that's why Jerry got mad.
Yeah.
Because I just made you asked me to make you the highest paid player and I did it by the way I thought was best for us to function.
Now you're
here.
Like, no, hold on a second.
Yeah.
NFL Power Index, you do have the Cowboys as courtesy of ESPN. They're at 11th on their NFL Power Index. The chances to win the Super Bowl, 16th, tied with the Broncos at 2.6%. Rams and Bills, your top two teams percentage
every
to win
year
the Super
those
Bowl
Bills.
This year.
Load
every
me
year.
Up, man. And 40-1.
Yeah, 40-1. Congratulations to Caleb Williams. Caleb.
Caleb.
He is living his childhood dream as the Madden cover athlete. So well done, Caleb.
A good health to you, sir.
Thank you, Walchuk. There's your football fix. It's in the books here for a Wednesday. Rangers pregame is now an hour and 21 minutes away. We'll give you some keys to victory before we get out of here. LA Live's coming up in about an hour. We got a rim session next, Chief.
Yeah, let's prep our bodies for game one next to the Nation.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through the Fan. It's NBA Finals game one tonight, and here's the Chief with some basketball discussions.
Yes, sir. Let's go ahead and cut the lights out. We'll put the kids down for that afternoon snoozer, and the G-Bag Nation goes all 56 inches around that rim. Always a special occasion when we are just hours away from Game 1 of the NBA Finals tip-off. You have the Larry O'Brien Trophy on the court for real for the first time in a long time. Aesthetically, it's going to look incredible, and I look forward to every single second of this thing. I do have a basketball question. Who is going to win Basketball Guy of the Day?
LeBron,
the all-time player who has averaged the most points per game in an NBA Finals. Okay, so all the NBA Finals that any individual has played, who's averaged the most points in the NBA Finals in NBA history? Who
Wilt
is
Chamberlain.
That player? You'd say Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you guys would guess this. I was surprised.
Bob Pettit.
Bill Russell.
Wrong.
Let's go with...
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Well, let's go with Oscar Robertson.
Wrong.
Bernard King.
Lou Alcindor.
Bob Cousy.
Everybody's
Jerry
wrong.
West.
Kobe.
Ilgauskas.
Everybody's wrong.
Magic.
Can we get a hint?
Kareem.
This is, you're talking about a Caucasian male from the, like the 70s?
From the
70s? Jerry West?
Oh.
No.
From the...
Cousy.
I guess both.
Cousy was a
60s?
Hang on. It's a 70s
guy? Havlicek stole the ball.
Pistol Pete.
No.
We got to go to Philadelphia.
Was it one of the Van Arsdales?
Bill Laimbeer.
Van Arsdales?
No.
This is not even a correct answer. You're ball sacking.
This is tough, dude. Saying, I wouldn't have guessed it. This player averaged.
Did you know who this player was?
Yeah, I know. You know who the player is.
Okay.
Now, you're talking about, let's see.
Dolph Shaves?
I'll give you the team. It's the Warriors.
Oh, Rick Barry.
Bang.
Rick Barry.
Darn
Rick
it.
Barry.
The 1970, okay, they beat the Washington Bullets?
That a baby Rick.
Let's see, who did they beat here? The Washington Bullets.
Man, I can't
them.
Remember what I had for lunch, but I pulled that one out.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Nice Barry job, Brian.
Barry averaged, he played in 10 NBA Finals games. He averaged 36.3 points per game.
Yeah, should have known. Underhand shooting. Never missed a free throw.
Yeah.
Had a soft, like, teardrop kind of, like, shot.
Yeah, I don't even know if I've seen a single highlight of his career.
Yeah.
But he scored quite a bit in the finals.
All his sons played. You know, all his sons.
Yeah.
Had.
Yeah, I know Brent.
Yeah.
Tony Brent. Parker knows Brent very well also.
Oh, that's right.
Michael Jordan is number two with 33.6 points per game in the finals. Jerry West, three. And then it's Kevin Durant at four.
Oh.
Ooh.
Then you get to Shaq at five, LeBron at six.
Did we even say Shaq? Oh, but we
Bob said, Pettit. Who said no, Bob Pettit?
I did.
Yeah, he's sitting at seven. Then you get Hakeem
Basketball
the Dream.
Guy today.
Steph Curry at nine.
Yeah, none of us got it.
Elgin Baylor at 10.
Bob Pettit was an LSU guy.
And then you have Dr. J and Kyrie Irving tied at 11 with 25.5 points per game. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Wow. Old Rick Barry.
Good for Rick.
Is the NBA Finals all-time per game scorer. Now, do you guys know the spread for tonight's game?
3.5.
4.5.
4.5, San Antonio at home.
3.5.
It is.
It's gone down, Eric.
It was 5.5.
Jeez, read a freaking book for once.
It is now 4.5. The Spurs were plus 6,600 to win the NBA championship when the season started. Okay? They would be the biggest long shot ever to win the NBA Finals. If you go back to the preseason
Should've
odds.
Should have put money on that.
Oh, yeah. I wonder what they were like 2 weeks in when they were a dumpster fire. They were a dumpster fire like a full month.
Except for that first game of the season when Wemby made his presence felt versus our Dallas Mavericks. Mm. Now, did you see what Wemby did?
Dawson
to...
came on and said we should just tank.
Yeah. It was four quarters of basketball that just said,
just
you know
tank.
What? We're good
this.
Here.
That's when that guy got baptized, right?
Yeah.
First game?
Exactly, yeah.
He was looking crazy out there.
Yeah, it was tough sled.
What's he playing, point guard? Yeah. What are you doing out there? Dude, kid deserves to be fired.
Jason Kidd wanted to make him uncomfortable.
Wanted to make him uncomfortable.
We have Victor Wembanyama treated the team to a screening of the movie Obsession as the Spurs tried to wind down from the emotional toll of Game 7 heading into the finals. So the Obsession movie, which apparently is like rocking the world right now. Everybody's loving this movie.
What's it about?
And it is, I don't know, it's a mysterious one-wish Willow to win his crush's heart.
Oh, a crush?
A hopeless romantic. Man, it's exactly what he asked for, but this is not a rom-com.
So this guy cried during the
He
finals,
soon
huh?
discovers that some desires come at a dark and sinister price. This is like it's a romantic horror film. It's not a rom-com. It's
I had a faked injury. I wouldn't have seen this.
You wouldn't have seen this movie?
No.
This is how he wanted to wind his guys down from what was a very emotional Western Conference Finals. Kevin Garnett, not a big fan of Wemby crying and showing emotion after beating the Thunder.
As the Knicks watched the movie The Warriors.
You're crying in motherfucking Western Conference Finals. That was too emotional for that to be. That was too emotional for me.
It was?
Yeah, man. You got, man, he got four more games to try to get. You got to go to the finals now. Nah, you still got to be even keel right here. And that trophy, that ain't what we, that's cool. Yeah, we beat them, cool. But I got a whole nother site, and it's up here. It's going to take my energy to run up this hill. I can't be you. Nah, that's how bad they wanted to beat OKC. You know what I'm saying? But, man, this right here, nah. And to me, this is the Knicks. Only window I see. They got to get it right now. I'm talking about, you got no Boston on here. You got no OKC. You got to go now. You got to go now.
Victor Wembanyama has more blocks than the Knicks have as a team this postseason. Of course, he's played in some more games. The Mitchell Robinson stuff's going to be interesting. The big man for the Knicks who hurt his pinky on an off day at his own house. Okay.
It just
there's
goofy.
Some Trayvon Diggs elements to this, but he's still going to play.
Stripper pole.
Think he's going to have some level of a hand wrap on
have a club out there.
The injured hand.
Be clubbing people.
He'll still be out there.
Is this an injury that our coach from Ohio State, was it Jacksonville, might have suffered? A little hand injury.
Oh, Urban Meyer.
Oh, my gosh.
Was this an Urban Meyer injury?
that was
Pinky, what do we got going?
Very, very violent. Was that another Diddy directorial?
Yes.
Potentially. Yeah. But, yeah.
The, a little pink in the stink.
The
put
Mitchell.
Your legs right here, playboy. There we go. Hold it. Let me go get the camera.
Smile now.
Wave.
Yeah, this is I think Mitchell Robinson is going to be a huge factor. He's a monster on the glass. Like, as an offensive rebounder, this dude is a total animal. They are going to need him to play the requisite 15 or so minutes per game. I think the interesting part of this, I saw from Kurt Goldsberry at The Ringer, the similarities between SGA and Jalen Brunson and how they both are mid-range type guys. They take a lot of two-pointers. And you saw Wemby be able to really neutralize that for SGA. In the regular season, SGA averaged 19 points per game on two-point attempts. Versus the Spurs, it went from 19 to 14 points. His field goal percentage on two-pointers in the regular season was 60%. And SGA versus the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals, 44%. His average shot distance on two-point field goals, SGA's in the regular season, was under 10. In the Western Conference Finals versus Wemby, it was over 13 feet. Okay, so his two-pointers, he had to push out a little bit more to consistently get those. He didn't make near as many in terms of points, and his efficiency went down in a big way. That's going to be huge for Jalen Brunson being able to get to his spots and not have the fear of Wemby, who was always lurking as sort of that free safety, and neutralize that. The big difference is that the Spurs did not have to worry about the three-point shooting of the other guys with the Thunder, and so they could really collapse things on SGA, whereas with the Knicks, if they continue their three-point prowess that they have throughout this postseason, everybody's going to have to stay glued to their guy. Now, you still have the Wemby factor, but I think that is going to be one of the more interesting chess matches here with Brunson trying to get to his spots, but Wemby being a guy who can really neutralize that.
No, I think you're absolutely on it, and that's why I think the Knicks are going to struggle to score points.
Yeah.
You know,
unless their three ball is really raining. Like, if they can continue this hot, where really, other than Mitchell Robinson, basically every guy the Knicks throw out there is a threat from deep.
Yeah, and Tim Cato had the point that they're one of the few teams that can play five out as maybe their best lineup or their best formation for the game, and if that plays out and they're hot from three, I think there's a chance I could be eating crow. Got a couple of requests on, you know, will I apologize to the Knicks if this, that, or the other thing happens? And I think the discussion starts at six games.
Apologize?
Yeah.
Come on.
I'll at least eat some crow. Well, and acknowledge that New York was better than I thought if they make it to six games. That's how convinced I am that San Antonio is going to demolish them.
What you should do is lean into your take that Wemby just doesn't have any help and the rest of the Spurs team sucks.
Here we go. I like
I've got you covered.
I like that. Thank you, man. Appreciate corner guy here. Hype man, Zach Wilczek.
Right.
We got three
you're
down.
Right either way.
One more to go, and the finest is next, Chief. You're going back to back.
Yeah, football flirtation and a salty NFL head coach. That is next here in the nation.